Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join out on the phone, online, or via text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at wdws.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome into Monday Morning Quarterbacks. And I'm filling in for Brian Barnhart, who's getting a little R&R, some vacation on this spring break. Lauren Tate is here with me, as always, here on Monday Morning Quarterbacks. And also Matt McCumber in the studio, too, as we will try to find something to talk about here on this Monday morning. I don't know. I guess we could talk Illinois baseball and softball. That might be fun.
Start with that.
We could scratch the surface a little bit. There was some college basketball, guys, over the weekend of the Sweet 16. And, boy, I'm tempted to say this was the greatest weekend of college basketball in the NCAA tournament in recent history. That's maybe a recency bias, but this was a fun weekend to watch and completely unpredictable.
No, absolutely. I sat there and watched hours upon hours of basketball all weekend, and just one game after another. You had the drama, you had upsets, you had favorites winning, you had the 16 over a 1, and I think this is the, since 2000, the highest seeded Sweet 16 since then, the last 18 years. I think the average seed now is 5.31, and it's just been unbelievable.
You know, I wonder, with all the things that preceded, if this played into it at all. For instance, Arizona, this is to a 16.
Right.
Think of all the problems they had along the way. First of all, they lose a coach.
Yeah.
Then they got a player under question. I think they lost a player. They got a coach under question, but who was retained. But I just wonder, we use the word distraction. And I could cite, I don't know how many schools that have had distractions here. Did that play into this at all?
I think distractions are real, personally. And I think
you don't lose if you're Auburn. You don't lose by that big a margin unless you've got some kind of distraction.
I would agree. I think it's not an excuse, but I think it's in the back of all those players' heads. It's in the back of the coaches' minds. I think it plays into it. And kind of at the end of the day, I think it's a little bit of justice served to some of these programs because, it just doesn't go away because they know they have to answer here in the coming weeks.
And there's a cloud over Tom Izzo as well, although you may say the distraction there was Syracuse's zone. But
absolutely.
Syracuse
is interesting this way. They can lose to the worst team, and they can beat the best team.
Absolutely.
they're that way. I mean, no matter who they play, it's going to be a close game.
Their defense travels. They have long athletes that passes that you think you can make don't get through, and it's unbelievable.
How do they shoot 25%? I mean, Michigan State, here you got Bridges, who's supposed to be a high draft pick, was supposed to be. He goes 4-for-17. They've had an erratic year. I mean, they were 28 points behind Northwestern once. I mean, I don't understand about Michigan State. If it's a game of guards, if it really is, if the national tournament is a game of guards, does Michigan State have the guards? And by the way, where was Jaren Jackson yesterday?
I don't know. 2 points, I think, is what. And
yeah, two free throws, 0-for-4.
That's right. And he was non-existent.
Explain that. He's a top five draft pick.
That's what his zone does.
Well, geez.
You know, it's the way people were talking about Syracuse kind of reminded me of the way they people were talked about Brad Underwood's teams, at least the teams of the past, not this past season, and that really tough to prepare for in the tournament. You know that 2-3 zone is coming, but yet people, the
you
ACC.
Don't face it very often, and they practice it, and they live it,
and
they recruit to it.
And Boeheim talked about it, that playing conference opponents is tough for them as Syracuse because they know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But out of the conference, it's really tough.
You bet.
And he's pulled it off.
And the thing that fooled me about it is they got the ball inside and they blocked him. Those guys are big.
Long athletes. And like you just said, he recruits to his zone.
Well, you can chime in as always. 356-9397 is the number to call. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. You can also email talk@wdws.com. We'll get some highlights, too, that we'll sprinkle in and some of the sound bites from a crazy Sweet 16 weekend. Also, anything on your mind, Illini-wise, basketball, football, state championships for high school basketball also in it. But there's a lot to unpack here with the Sweet 16, how the Big Ten performed, Bruce Weber advancing to the Sweet 16. We want to get into that. Loyola, of course, is a great story. There's a lot of directions we can go here this morning. We're back in a moment with Monday Morning Quarterbacks.
Towns will inbound in midcourt just to the left of us. Holds the basketball, gets it into Custer in the backcourt. Here he comes across the timeline, 8 seconds. Custer dribbling right. Custer stops, fires a 15-footer, bounces, and it goes! It went in! 3.6 seconds left. Schofield to inbound, into Bone, on the run, into the front court. Top of the key, three at the buzzer. No! And Loyola wins! The Ramblers win it! On to the Sweet 16! Here come the Loyola players again, racing onto the court to celebrate.
It's amazing what you can do when you get a group of people believing and that are really tight. I said that since day one, and I've said it for years now. The guys, we have a close-knit culture, and the guys in the locker room pull for each other. They share the ball, and it's just amazing. We really believe.
Highlights courtesy of Westwood One, Ryan Radke on the call, and then the head coach of Loyola, Porter Mosier, as Loyola is in the Sweet 16. It's Monday Morning Quarterback. Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart, Lauren Tate here as always, and Matt McCumber sitting in as well as we are recapping a wild weekend in the Sweet 16. By the way, Loyola is a Cinderella team.
Absolutely.
I'm going to set a rule, though. You can't be a Cinderella team until you get into the Sweet 16. One win, and people are slapping the Cinderella label on. It was nice that UMBC got the upset win over a one seed.
Well, I would say that one person out of 10 on the street could have told you what UMBC stands for.
I would agree with that.
I mean, I just remember, of course, it's Baltimore, so that makes it easier, but it's Baltimore County in Maryland. But, you know, It's hard to believe what they accomplished.
Side note, the president of that school is a graduate alum of U of I.
Wow.
Is he?
Yeah,
did
he got a
that.
Master's and a PhD in education here.
This is a team that lost to Albany by 40.
That's right.
By 40.
They only scored 39 points in that game.
Michael Kaiser was saying before we went on the air, what would have happened to Bruce Weber if K-State lost that game?
He would have been scalded.
It would not have been pretty, but I'm glad they were able to get the 7-point win last night, and I feel good for Coach Weber.
Is there a new emphasis on defense? I know Cincinnati lost, and I know Virginia lost, but some of these teams, like Kansas State, play pretty good defense. Syracuse is certainly a strong defense. There's several really good defensive teams left in there.
Yeah, they're 9 out of the top 20 KenPom defensive teams are in the Sweet 16. So, like I said at the beginning, defense travels in the NCAA tournament, especially this year. K-State and Texas Tech, I think Tech is 4th in the nation out of the Big 12. They're 2 out of the 16 there. Syracuse is part of
it. How do
you
like West Virginia?
I love West Virginia's defense. They're actually not even in the top 20.
They're not?
No, I think they're 41. And Kansas is in the 40s too. But
now, how's that based? I mean, is that based on points allowed or what?
Well, it's a lot of different factors. It's turnover percentage. It's
created.
Yeah, it's all creative. It's all metrics. It's kind of like the saber metrics of baseball. So there's a lot of different things that go into it. But it's how you defend the 2-point field goal line, 3-point field goal line, stuff like that. How many points off your turnovers, a lot of different metrics. But, you know, it takes defense to win, I think, in the NCAA tournament, and we're seeing that especially right now.
Chime in at 356-9397 to Montrose and Alan. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, guys. Lauren, I guess you watched Liddell and Iowa to Sumo this weekend.
Yep.
How did Iowa do? I know Friday he wasn't particularly good, from what I was told. A lot of people wasn't too impressed with him, but he had a better game in the championship game, right?
Yes, he scored 28 points. He's just not a physical player. That's the concern. He's not very aggressive defensively. He's not very aggressive toward the board. He is 6'4". He's very thin. He's skinny, and thin legs. And I just I just don't know how that fits into what Underwood wants to do, because Underwood wants to be very aggressive, and that's not his strength. But he is a very talented player. As I said, he scored 28. So what'd you think of him?
I didn't get to watch because I didn't get the games, but you know, I've seen film and watched highlights here and there. I'm with you. I think, you know, he needs to really come in this summer and beef up, because
I don't think that body will beef up.
No.
I mean, when you're that thin, that thin, how do you get –
And this concerns me, too, because the word on Mark Smith was Big Ten ready, Big Ten ready, and he ended up kind of being soft out there a little bit. I don't know if that was mental or physical.
Yeah, he didn't have a jump shot. Io's got a jump shot, and Io looks to me like he's going to be – semi-erratic three-point shooter. I think he's going to be streaky, right, but I don't think he's going to be really consistent. When you see shots that are a little bit off the mark and they're not straight, you've got to be able to shoot the ball straight every time. It just should be a difference whether it's long or short. But his three-point shot is not consistent.
Right, and I do have hope because of Trent Frazier. You know, I look at him. Yeah. He's not big of build, and he was able to – you know, hold his own throughout a very tough and tumble.
He's tenacious.
He is. And that would probably be the difference between him and Io right now. He's got more of that just dog in him, I think, he's aggressive and he can get to the rim. And that will be something we'll have to watch and see if Io can do it when he gets here.
Anything else, Alan?
Yeah, there's one more about Liddell. Lauren, is it worth really recruiting him, because the odds are...
Now, wait a minute. What are you talking about? We've been recruiting him for 3 years. Is it worth recruiting him? Come on.
Well, okay, Lauren. Is he really interested in Illinois?
Yes. Yes, he is. Absolutely.
Well, he's supposedly good friends with Mark Smith, and his dad knows Quanzo Martin. So that tells me right there,
His dad didn't even go on the visit. When he went to Missouri, his dad didn't even go. His dad doesn't like Missouri.
I thought that was Ramey you was talking about.
His dad did not go to – wait a minute. It was Ramey.
It's Ramey.
I'm sorry.
Ramey you
was
talking
about.
Yeah,
I don't think there is – okay, I'm mixed up. You're right. It was Ramey's dad who didn't go. But the idea that you wouldn't recruit Liddell is insane. I mean, that isn't even a consideration. Right. They've committed to him all the way. They talk to him every week. They talk to him almost daily.
Yeah.
That's Walker's main assignment.
I just figured that's
well, you're just being negative, Alan. You're giving up before you even start. Come on. You got
to
try.
I'm wanting to be a little realistic here. I mean,
you want to get mediocre players, right? You don't want to get
really
the good ones.
That hasn't worked either.
Thanks, Alan.
I can guarantee you they're going to go 100%.
100%. They're all in.
Liddell.
Yeah.
I mean, are there times – I think Alan's point is, are there times when you – don't bother because you know at the end of it you're not going to win that recruiting
Here's
battle.
The problem. If a guy from Mishawaka tells you that you're in the final two, what do? You know he's probably going to go to Notre Dame, right, Jackson? But you've got to recruit him because he's told you he's interested.
Yeah.
If the guy from Louisville tells you that he's really interested and he signs with you, commits to you, rather, and then doesn't sign on the last day, should you not have recruited him? I don't know. Yeah. I mean, when guys tell you they're interested – when Alexander tells you, yeah, I'm coming.
You got to go.
He says, I'm coming.
Right.
And he didn't come.
He didn't. You have to take kids for their word.
Jeremiah Tillman.
That's right. And you got to give it the old college try and go as hard as you can at him. And sometimes it's not going to work out.
You don't do it if they tell you they're not interested.
Right. I would agree with that. Yeah, it's a waste of resources, a waste of time, and their effort spent elsewhere.
All right, here's a text in. Are you ready for this, Lauren? Because you're going to get blamed.
Okay.
It was great to 217 Texas says it was great to hear all of the accolades that Coach Bruce Weber received during the game. If only Tate and Turpin didn't bring him down and turn the community against him, maybe we wouldn't be dancing.
Is that right?
I guess, well, according to this texture, You ran him out of town.
Yeah, well, I don't think that happened. I think what happened was that the team fell apart on him. Yeah. Just completely fell apart, particularly at Nebraska, where they got run out of the gym, and he had lost control of him.
A friend of mine tweeted, it's possible to believe that Bruce Weber should have been fired from Illinois and recognize that he is a good coach.
Yeah.
In other words, it wasn't working at Illinois.
Right.
And now it is, to a degree at least.
Well, I mean, okay, you're saying the last two games, but he hadn't done anything the last 5 years much.
Yeah.
I don't think he had an NCAA win for at least 4 years.
Coaching staff, not the problem, obviously.
No, absolutely
not. Talent level.
One last year in the first four, and then went and played a tough Cincinnati team in the first round after beating Wake Forest and lost that game. But before that, at K-State, correct, the year they won the Big 12, shared it with Kansas, they lost first round to LaSalle. I think that was a 4-13 matchup. So he's got some success now, obviously, two wins and got to the Sweet 16. But before that, it was just the first four win against Wake Forest.
Now, if he beats Kentucky.
Yeah, now that'd be
that'll
something.
Quiet everybody.
And you do have to remember, he's playing without arguably his best player in Dean Wade, who averages 16-7. So they're seeing if they could get him back possibly for Kentucky and kind of go from there. But
a lot of people think that he should have been fired before he was fired, or that he shouldn't have been fired. He was fired exactly when he should have been. That's when he finally lost control of the team. That's when he needed to go, and that's when he was fired.
The problem was the replacement. It wasn't a good replacement hire.
Well, it was good the first year.
Yeah, but in the long term, I don't think you look at John Gross as a success here.
No, because he couldn't. He was like Bruce. We've had about, 10 years where our recruiting has just been really, really bad.
Yeah, I'd say mediocre at best.
Yeah, and that's why you have mediocre results. It's right. Players.
Mark,
it is.
Mark Tex, going back to going after E.J. Liddell, that's the gamble you take with recruiting, kind of punctuating there that, yep, you have to go after him.
Oh, well, yeah.
And yeah, you might lose him, but you got to go after him.
Would we stop now after 3 years of total commitment to him?
No.
I mean, they've been, seriously, they've been after him since the eighth grade.
We wouldn't.
I mean, Walker has.
Yeah, right.
We wouldn't stop this show, but that we need to take a break and get some news. We'll do that on the other side of this and then carry on with Monday Morning Quarterbacks. Weigh in at 356-9397 and Texas Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. 38 degrees at 931 Monday Morning Quarterbacks. We step aside for a look at news. With the latest, here's Michael Kaiser.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk@wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357.
Sneed will inbound. Back it goes. Pressure comes. Feeds it ahead to Stokes. Stokes to Mayween all alone. Two-hand stuff. And that might be just enough for Kansas State. Up 48-41. 40 seconds to go.
I'm happy for these guys because they worked so hard. I threw this at them way back in April last spring. I said, guys, we won a game. Now the next step is to get to the Sweet 16. And I threw it at them a couple weeks ago. You know, again, just to, you put that little vision in there.
Highlights courtesy of Westwood One. Kevin Kugler on the call, and you recognize that voice, Bruce Weber, as the Kansas State Wildcats are one of 16 remaining in the NCAA tournament. Welcome back, everybody. Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart, who's getting some time off. Lauren Tate here, as always, on Monday mornings for Monday Morning Quarterbacks, and Matt McCumber here as well.
Do I dare throw a little bit of reality into this business? That was a terrible game that he beat Baltimore. That was a terrible game that Kansas State played. I mean, are we kidding? This is the worst.
It was not aesthetically pleasing. I will give you that.
Good win over Creighton.
Absolutely.
Two comparable teams.
Absolutely.
Could have gone either way. But the second, he got a break, and he took advantage of it by beating an awful team that was playing terrible, and Kansas State wasn't playing much better.
Brian in Nebraska would tend to agree with you, Lauren. He says, I want to say congrats to Coach Weber on making his first Sweet 16 with his own players in, 15, 20 years? What an accomplishment. especially against such Power 5 opponents as Creighton and UMBC. Seriously, I know this won't be popular amongst the panel today, but it's my two cents. I find it appalling, he says, okay, that WDWS spends so much time talking about the coach who tanked the Illinois basketball program to a point that it still hasn't recovered from. I don't hear much talk about self over the airwaves. Is it just because it's so novel because Weber advancing in the tourney is so rare? Sorry,
it
Matt.
It is rare, no question.
Matt's like, I'm not coming back to this. You're
all
taking
good.
It like a champ.
Yeah, you know, hey. I work for the man, so, you know.
He's a good guy.
He is. I've got a
shook his hand twice in the last month.
Well, there you go.
At high school games. I mean, we're still friends. He's a nice guy.
He's a
really nice guy.
Unbelievable human.
No doubt that he got an easy path, the easiest path into the Sweet 16 right
now.
Absolutely. I would agree with that 100%.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, he took advantage and they won at least.
What are you going to do, put an asterisk on the banner?
In the national championship some, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, and every game they played was against a team that wasn't supposed to be there.
Right.
So, you know, you get breaks in a tournament like this. There's a lot of upsets in this tournament. Don't you realize that Louisville – and Middle Tennessee State, but Louisville just beat Middle Tennessee State in the NIT. But don't you see why they wanted to get in? Because anybody that gets in can win.
Anything can happen.
To the phones, 356-9397 and John. Hey, John.
Hi, guys. I love the program, but the way Bruce Weber won last night, I'll give him kudos. But, you know, if you look at it, I picked it, believe it or not, Kansas can win this whole thing.
No, absolutely. I mean, they have the players.
Clemson's in their path, and then either Syracuse or Duke to get to the Final Four.
I'm a Clemson grad, so I look at the whole picture. Self can win this.
Yeah, indeed. Who are you pulling for? Clemson?
Yep. I got to pull for Clemson, but I picked Seth to win it because I didn't think Clemson was going to beat Auburn. I don't know. I tell you, this team with Clemson, it just shocked me. I'm like, wait a minute. This is not the Clemson team that I saw getting in the tournament. Auburn, I don't know what they – it's just like they just didn't understand the game of basketball.
That was a – what, they have like 20 points at half? It was one point, it was 41-19.
Yeah, I watched Kenny and I watched Charles. When they put the bubble up for the alert, I noticed Charles looked at like, what is going on? I was hoping Charles wouldn't say nothing out of the whack. But Steph can win this whole thing. He can win it. It's his.
Thanks much, John.
His to win, his to lose. Take care.
All right, appreciate it. On to Eric, 356-9397. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, good morning, guys. A couple of things I noted. One of the first years, no 12-5 upsets. I don't know if you noticed that. That was, I think
13 is the new 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess the fives are really underseeded. I mean, Kentucky, West Virginia, those are good teams. Those weren't like your typical, soft five seeds. Also, Laura said one thing interesting, anybody can win it. You know, it's not really true. There hasn't been a new first-time winner since 2006 in Florida. It's the same program year after year after year. Kentucky, Duke, Villanova, Kansas. You name it. To get a new one is very rare.
You're right. Absolutely. In terms of winning, I mean, Villanova has been trending in this direction for a number of years with a great coach there. But I was just going over some of the coaches that lost. I mean, these are all bad coaches that lost. I mean, North Carolina's got a bad coach, right? I mean, he's not very good. Cincinnati had a terrible year, and he didn't get them ready for the tournament. I mean, I could go down the list of guys that lost here. I think Kruger's a good coach, but he doesn't show it with this guy. Young just destroyed his team, basically.
Yeah.
And, he made his team, but he also made it very difficult to win. Butler's got a heck of a program going, and yet they lost a close game. I mean, I can go on and on. Izzo lost. Is he a bad coach, you know?
Well, he coached a horrendous game yesterday. Horrendous.
Well,
Jackson barely even played. He barely even played in the second half, which is absolutely ridiculous. The guy's going to be like a third pick in the NBA draft.
I don't,
he was on the bench for most of the time.
I don't understand that. Somebody's got to explain that. I don't understand it. I don't.
And every was a 3-2, and they were missing all. It was incredible to watch. You talked about the Kansas State game was bad. That Michigan State Syracuse game was bad. Put basketball back 20 years. It was horrible.
Yeah,
thanks, Eric.
Syracuse is hard to play against.
Very, very hard.
You know, he's right. You know, if you want to play percentages and odds, your top seeds are always the ones you're going to want to bet on. And if you had infinite time and you could pit all these teams together in series, two out of three, three out of five, four out of seven, the better team's always win series. But the better team doesn't always win a game.
That's exactly right. And North Carolina got to the final game 2 years in a row, 1-1. And what happened to them? I mean, they couldn't find
shock,
their...
Shock and awe yesterday. They were absolutely just dumbfounded by the Texas A&M Aggies, and they ran them out of the gym. It wasn't even a game. You know, it was 20 at half, and it ended up being even more than that in the second.
I'm not surprised that Xavier's out, but I was surprised they had this early of an exit. But they were regarded as the weakest number one seed.
Well, how many teams just went out and got 15-point leads and then lost? I mean, Xavier had that game all the way yesterday. I think they were 12 was the most they ever got ahead. But they just couldn't control the game at the end.
Right. They were up 11.
Have you noticed when teams are behind how much faster their cutters go, how much more aggressive they are?
Yes.
And you got that lead, and you're just thinking, look at the clock, and boy, the clock isn't moving fast enough.
Right, and there's something to be said for the finality of the season. And players notice that, and they kind of get a little pep in their step, and then they start getting aggressive. Then you see the other team, the leading team, back on their heels. I think they get a little tight, play a little, you know, rough and tumble down the stretch, and it makes for great drama.
I got to give Mathias credit. His team's 1 point ahead. They're holding the ball, and he took that really tough shot. I say it's a tough shot. It's one he practices all the time.
That's his
shot.
That's right.
And he nailed it, and that saved Purdue. Purdue was on the verge of losing. They had a 1 point lead.
If anybody for him, I mean, I'm sure he's taken over 100,000 shots, you know, way more than that. And, you know, I would want him taking the shot. I would believe in him if I were Matt Painter.
Got a note in here regarding Illinois softball. They are home tomorrow to start their home season in a doubleheader against UIC, and they have moved the start of that doubleheader up to 2:15 out at Eichelberger Field. And go see Tyra Perry squad. Tyra Perry just collected her 500th career win, not with Illinois, but overall amongst all her schools. You can join in here as we are recapping a wild weekend of Sweet 16 madness, and we can go any other direction you want sports-wise. It's Monday Morning Quarterback, Scott Beatty with Lauren Tate, and sitting in as well, it's Matt McCumber, 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. We're back with more after this.
14 to shoot, 20 seconds to go. Harms, out on the right side, it goes to Klein. Klein, out top. The three by Mathias, and it's good! Dakota Mathias, one of the great shooters in the country, comes up with the biggest shot of the day for Purdue. A five-point lead for the Boilermakers.
Just proud of our guys. You know, we found a way. We lost big fella, and, you know, he's a big part of our team, but I think we also show we got a lot of pieces, and we got a lot of guys, and we're able to hang in there and get them.
Dakota Mathias with some magic for Purdue. That was not an easy shot. Purdue into the Sweet 16. And one of the two Big Ten teams left in this tournament as they edge their in-state rivals, Butler 76-73. Scott Beatty here, along with Lauren Tate and Matt McCumber from Monday Morning Quarterbacks. I'm filling in for Brian Barnhart. He'll be back with you on Thursday and Friday and going forward, as we kind of split up this spring break week. And Purdue, can they advance now without Isaac Haas? They had Harms step up, kind of. I mean, he takes up some of the similar space.
You think Haas might play a few minutes?
Well, I did think so. I think he warmed up with them yesterday, and he wanted to try. And then right before the game, they asked Painter, and he said, no way, he's not playing.
Well, I don't think the brace got cleared by the NCAA.
CAA, yeah. I don't think it did either, and that was part of the deal.
If you were going to use him, I mean, Harms obviously needs a bit of rest from, and not long rest. I'm sure he can come back in pretty quick, but maybe if you could throw him in for a couple minutes, you don't have to use him offensively. He certainly could play defensively.
Right.
It amazed me that he went through the end of that game not knowing he had a fracture. Then all of a sudden you get an X-ray and says, well, you fractured. Oh, okay, now I can't play.
Yeah, I'm out.
All right, John in Forsyth emails in at talk@wdws.com. Watching the Marshall, West Virginia three-ball horse contest, the game is no longer real basketball, but a game of horse, more or less, with guys just being guarded for long shots. How fun is that? And could not be more clear that it is time to just let all the teams into the tournament. All right, well, that would be 350-some teams. It would take forever.
All the teams are in the tournament.
Yeah, you get a chance every year.
They all play a tournament at the end. If they win the tournament, they're in.
Exactly.
That's right.
But I don't know about the three-point shot. It's just something we got to live with. But it is determining one game after another. I look up, and I don't know how many in a row Michigan State missed. Right. I mean, there were several games where teams have missed 10 in a row, and it's like throwing the ball out of bounds.
Well, and yesterday, North Carolina was at one point one of 22 from three.
Ooh.
And, you know, they shot 7% going into halftime, and it just, you know, from three.
And sometimes at this point, because the three-point line is not that far away anymore for most of these guys, it looks like free throws. But then Michigan State, 8 of 37, and what you said there, you can go so cold on it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a streaky business when you're shooting threes.
Would you like to see it further out?
I'd probably move it to the FIBA, but international line. But I don't know if I go all the way NBA. But I don't know.
It puts too much excitement in the game to do away with it.
Yeah, you.
But
can't.
It is not basketball. It should have gotten a different name. As soon as the 3-point shot came in, it was not basketball anymore. It was something else, and I don't know what it was. But it's not the same game. When you're counting by threes, boy, they add up in a hurry. And it's you know, you become gullible to it. I mean, you just fall
in love with it.
It's like fool's gold, except that when you're hitting them, boy, oh, boy, and it has a psychological impact as well.
I watched somebody have to sort of, the shot clock was winding down, and they ended up taking a step inside the three-point line from the top of the key, missed the shot. It's the dumbest shot in basketball now, the long two. Yep. It's such a low percentage shot. You want layups, free throws, and three-pointers. Yep. Take those and show you the points you get per attempt is worth all of those shots.
If you get an unguarded three on the line, squared up with time to shoot it, that's a high percentage shot.
Yes.
High percentage. But if you're shooting it under duress, that's a different story.
I hate guys that come down and it's one-on-one ball, kind of like NBA style, that do the step backs. I think it's a terrible low percentage shot, and you know they're trying to create or whatnot and get their shot off. But a step back three, give me something else.
We're back in a moment. It's Monday Morning Quarterbacks. Monday Morning Quarterbacks, Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. Brian's back in the penny chair on Thursday morning. Lauren and Matt here as well. Castle Heating and Cooling text line, CJ says, you play with the guys who are here. It's hard to believe that grown people sit and fret over what high school kids may or may not do. Take up knitting. Perhaps that will calm some of these guys down, CJ.
Take up knitting, huh?
We are still dissecting Sweet 16 on the other side of news. We'll get more into that as well. Also want to touch on Isaiah Martinez losing a national championship bout. Baseball and softball had winning weekends.
By the way, did you see what Spillane did?
8 of 10 in a doubleheader.
Holy cow, 3 home runs in a row.
I'm thinking Big Ten player of the week. So
you think?
Yeah, we'll get into that on the other side of CBS and local news. Join us. It's News Talk 1400 WDWS, Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk@wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
In the backcourt, Livers will inbound. There's no defense on it. 3.6 to go. Michigan down 2. Livers gets the basketball. Looking. Throws it into Rockmont at midcourt. 2 seconds. Rockmont off the pool. 3 for the win. He got it! Jordan Poole, the freshman, hits it at the buzzer, and Michigan is off to the Sweet 16. 64-63 is your final.
Highlights courtesy of Westwood One. Brandon Gowden on the call there as Michigan pulls out another miracle. Jordan Poole, not Jordan Peele, as some people out there on the internet are getting confused about, not the director of Get Out. Welcome in, everybody. Monday morning quarterbacks. I'm Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart, Lauren Tate here, and also Matt McCumber sitting in as we dissect this Sweet 16 weekend. Glad to have you along. Appreciate it. Let's go to the phones. And JD is up. Hi, JD.
Hi, guys. Good show this morning. Enjoying it. Some observations from the weekend. Most overused term, good no call. Worthless piece of information. Number of games that the officiating crew has worked in the NCAA. Most pathetic moment, Tracy Wolfson's whiny interview with Roy Williams. I thought she was going to put her head on his shoulder and start crying. Most no-class moment, the coach from Baltimore dropping the F-bombs over and over again on national TV. I don't care if they'd beat Cleveland Cavaliers. Show some class when you win. And the most class moment, yesterday on the way home from Detroit, the Purdue team bus stopped in Wabash, Indiana at Culver's, got out of the bus, spent time with the people of Wabash, took pictures, autographs, just a real class move by Matt Painter. So good. Now my rant's done. I'm going to go out and hit some golf balls, and all's right with the world. Have a great day.
All right. Appreciate it, JD. 43 degrees. I didn't hear, actually, any of those interviews that were mentioned, but I usually, as a game was ending, I was switching to another one.
Well, the one interview wasn't an interview. It was he was talking in his locker room.
Yeah, it was Nevada with Musselman. Yes, he.
Oh, that's who
not
it was. Yeah.
Not Baltimore yes. County.
Yeah,
right,
that's right.
Yeah,
you're right.
It was Nevada, but
yeah, I only saw him drop one. But was there more?
There were two, okay. And then they cut after that. But you know, you always got to be careful. There's always cameras around.
Yeah, lately, they've been putting delays on those things. You know, you'll hear, you know, especially in when they mic up the dugouts in the World Series. I mean, baseball teams are notorious.
If you could hear how managers talk and how coaches talk when they're alone in that locker room, you wouldn't believe it.
There are some dirty sailors out there.
Tommy Lasorda was the all-time greatest.
Oh, I can imagine.
I worked with a coach in minor league baseball who was introduced to Tommy Lasorda, who was his manager when he was in the major leagues. And the first thing, his introduction to Tommy Lasorda, is they're eating in a deli in New York. Lasorda walks by, sticks his hand in this guy's potato salad, takes out a scoop, just puts it in his mouth, and just walks by and goes, and that was my introduction to Tommy Lasorda. 356-9397 is our phone number, and we go to Mark. Hey, Mark. And Mark, you're on the air, Mark. Going once, going twice. Try us again, Mark. I think we lost him. Castle Heating Cooling text line is 356-9397. Michigan, we haven't talked much about Michigan yet. I actually put them in the Final Four because I think they were riding high and thought they had some good momentum in a weak West bracket. Turns out the South is even more up for grabs.
Right.
But one thing they've been able to do is all season long is find ways to win in close games at the last moment. And they've done it twice. I think they need a more convincing win this time over Texas A&M.
Yeah, I call it the beeline factor. He just knows how to win those close games and always seems to have his team prepared. You know, they made the last second shot, and they say after the game, you know, we practiced this hundreds of times throughout the course of the year, and it showed. I mean, they executed when they needed to execute, and I mean, he made a heck of a shot. I mean, don't get me wrong, but just unbelievable. And you give John Beilein another week to prepare for a very good Texas A&M team. I'm really anxious and looking forward to that game.
Yeah, I just see that as 50-50.
Absolutely.
You just can't keep winning all the close ones. And Michigan deserves a lot of credit, but they had lost that game, actually.
They did.
All the guys got to do is make a couple free throws, and it's over.
It's over, right.
You know?
I'm surprised they didn't put anybody on the ball there. I like somebody on the ball in that instance. I mean,
why is that such a big argument?
I don't know. I think it's the same with Fallon, you know, up three or whatnot.
I want five guard and four, and you want a guy on the ball. So we disagree on this.
Yeah.
But I did notice that they tried to use that, the old deal where they brought a guy down in one of the games. They brought a guy down to take a charge, you know, as he ran the baseline.
Right.
And in the game against Michigan, Smith was run over.
Yes, you got to be careful for charges right
and
there.
And they didn't call it.
They didn't. I know.
Most officials won't call it.
They will swallow the whistle. You're right.
I don't know if it's swallowing the whistle. They just know it's a set up deal, and they won't. Yeah. I don't know what that is, but they. I just don't. I like to have an extra guy back there. I don't know. I've never seen the ball deflected on the other end by the big guy that they always put down there.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so much deflection for me. I think it's just the difficulty of the pass trying to get it over. I think it's just harder. It changes the trajectory of it. Not in the sense of getting tipped, but of where you're trying to throw it to and how high it might get to the player. You know, he was able to catch the ball chest level. You know, he didn't have to jump up and get it and waste time and come down. So that's just what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And the 5-on-4, you know, or 5 versus 5, as you saw, they double teamed the inbounder when he got the ball, and he was able to pass to a wide open pool. So,
whoa, he wasn't wide open. He shot it in the face of a defender. That guy nearly blocked it.
I'm talking he was wide open when he received the pass.
Okay.
And then somebody got to him. But it took two defenders onto one that he was able to get open. In that situation, I want everybody to stay solid. There's no need for a double team there, in my opinion. And Poole was able to get open. But you're right. After he did receive the ball and made the shot, he was well guarded. But in that instance, have somebody on Poole, have somebody on, make them take the half court shot.
It's a major discussion point. Everybody, there's a lot of disagreement on it. Go ahead.
Mark, I think we have Mark again. Hey, Mark.
Hi. I watched the game, the Michigan-Houston game, and I was simply appalled by Steve Lavin and his comments towards the Houston coach, talking about what a great person he was, considering he was now in 4 NCAA tournaments with 4 different teams. And I'm just thinking, really, you were a cheater at Oklahoma and you're a cheater at Indiana. You caused Indiana to have your records wiped off the books because of your egregious comment, you know, your egregious conduct. And now all of a sudden, he's back in the NCAA. You know, isn't there a ban for life? I realize he had to show cause. And, you know.
Are you talking about Kelvin Sampson?
Yeah.
I don't use his name.
Yeah. Well, you're right about that.
Lavin was heaping praise on it, and I'm thinking the guy is a documented cheater, even under the lax NCAA rules. And you're sitting there heaping praise on him. I'm so incensed, I'm writing Lavin a note.
Well, you know, the guy must have been well-liked by some of the – he was voted the president of the Coaches Association when he was at Oklahoma. He's well-liked in the fraternity, but he cheated like the devil. Yeah. It was all on phone calls, by the way. I think that was the only cheating.
You know, I mean, he managed to decimate – he and Miles Brand and the president Hebert all managed to decimate Indiana University basketball within a very short period of time.
I think most Illini fans wouldn't resent him for that.
That's not a bad thing, is it?
All three of those guys truly need to be in the Illinois Hall of Fame because they managed to crush Indiana University.
Well, Indiana must be important because Underwood gets an extra $15,000 every time he ever beats them.
Appreciate it, Mark. Appreciate your passion there. Let's go to Bill. Bill, how are you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
For the first time in years, I watched some high school basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I seemed really disinterested in shooting that chuck shot. I call, we used, chin chucker, we used to call him, in the first half. He came on the second half, played a pretty good ball. But I watched the championship game. That was a great game. E.J. Liddell is a special talent, but being a shot blocker at 6'7" in high school is kind of different from college. How do you think his game will translate? I really want him, but how do you think it'll –
Well, he's got a great medium-range jump shot that you can't stop.
And he can step out and even shoot the three.
Absolutely. He can.
And
he does everything.
He does. He does. And I think he does it fairly well in every aspect of his game. I like his the thing with shot blockers is all about timing. Yeah, it helps if you're 6'11", 6'10", 7 foot. But being at 6'7", I think he's unbelievable timing. And I think that will carry over until, you know, Division I.
You get four players like him with him, you got a good team.
Absolutely. I'll take four or five of them.
But then you see, no matter how good you are, look what happens to you in the tournament. Anything can happen.
Anything.
On to Chris. Hello, Chris.
Hey, good morning, guys. Just following up on two things that were recently being talked about there. Those comments of Lavin's kind of bothered me, too, especially when his announcing partner had to remind him that there were actually two coaches on the sidelines. He'd taken four teams to the NCAA, and one of them didn't get nailed twice out of the four. So, he seemed to have a little man crush going on there or something like that. I'm not sure what. On that inbounds play, yeah, I think where a lot of people were talking about covering it is Livers used to be a baseball pitcher in high school, and that was a real line drive that he was able to throw.
Right.
Since he couldn't run the baseline, somebody in front of him, Rockman wouldn't have had anywhere near the space, I think is the thing. The space that he had with that quick delivery let him get across half court with time enough to decide whether to shoot it or pass it, et cetera. And, you know, somebody standing down there in Livers' face would have kind of prevented that. It would have had to been more of a lob. So I'd kind of agree with you on that part.
Appreciate your call, Chris. Got to roll on here. Tony is up next. Hey, Tony.
Hi. Number 24 for Nevada, is he from Champaign?
Yes, yeah. He is.
Jordan Caroline.
Yep.
Is that Simeon Rice's son?
Simeon Rice's son, J.C. Caroline's daughter's son. The parents are Simeon Rice and J.C. Caroline's daughter.
And
he's a good player.
You bet he's a good player.
Yeah. And his potential to be here in an Illini uniform next year, this coming season, I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean. Oh,
as a senior?
Yeah. As a grad transfer, right?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, all the twins are both could transfer, and the Martin twins could transfer, and so could he. But I don't know whether they intend to do that, or I have no idea. I know that Illinois is very actively engaged with Jordan, because they've got people from Champaign who would like to see him back in Champaign.
Appreciate the call, Tony. We have a break here. We've got a check of news and more Monday morning quarterbacking when we come back.
Are you tired?
More Monday morning quarterbacking coming up in just a moment, but 43 degrees at 10:30. Time for local news. Here's Michael Kaiser.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS.
Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart on this Monday morning quarterback. We've got Lauren Tate and Matt McCumber here, and they will be back with us in just a moment. But wanted to take a moment here to highlight something very special in the realm of sports, and that is the upcoming Gottheil Cup on March 30th at the U of I Ice Arena. This is organized by Diane Gottheil, who is here in honor of your late son, Josh. Diane, an honor to have you here. This hockey tournament, what's it all about?
Well, I have to say that the organizers are actually the Sigma Phi Epsilon fraternity on the U of I campus, and they have for many years been doing their philanthropic work for Josh's Fund. This is the fourth annual Gottheil Cup, and it's along with three other fraternities on the campus, and they get together and they do a fundraiser for Josh's Fund, for which we're extremely grateful. This year is special because they're bringing down Jim Cornelison, who's to sing the Star Spangled Banner. He's famous in Chicagoland, famous among all Blackhawk fans, me included. And I also like the Blues. So it's going to be a big event. It's admission at the door, 8 p.m. on the 30th. It's very exciting.
And we have one of the student organizers with us on the phone on spring break up in the Chicago area. It's Matt Morrow. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on, man.
Appreciate it. How were you able to land Jim Cornelison?
Honestly, Facebook. Like, I played the game last year, and I wanted to think of a way to have more people to come out, and I thought that'd be it. You know, I just messaged him on Facebook. He said he would do it. We got some community sponsors, thanks to iHotel and Hendrick House for doing that. And that was really it. It came together pretty quick. So,
what motivates you to be a part of this tournament and organizing it?
I've been playing hockey for a long time, and when I was, you know, doing my rushing and everything with SIGEP, everyone was telling me about the Gatel Cup, and I, you know, immediately was very interested in it. Diane's a great lady, and I'm really happy to be a part of the cause.
And was it a hard sell to get Jim down here to sing the national anthem?
No, he was, you know, he wanted to do it right away. I mean, he said he loved, you know, what we were doing down here, and he hadn't heard of that before, so he's very excited to come down, I think.
Diane, what has this tournament, this what has it done for the fund and for the organization?
Of course, it's contributed a significant amount, which SIGEP has done over the years. They've raised a lot of money for Josh's fund, which supports oncology nurses. And it's very meaningful when students get together and show what's really great about them. And I've seen this over the years, that this is a wonderful bunch of young men. And the alumni who are very involved, they invited me to their grand conclave last summer in Orlando, and they honored the local chapter. It's just very moving, and I can't thank them enough. I'm deeply grateful.
And Matt, for folks who go out and watch this tournament, what are they going to see?
It's going to be awesome. If you haven't seen Jim Cornelison do an anthem, you have to come out. Place is going to be rocking. Guys are going to be pumped. I know the adrenaline's going to be high. Just from speaking with some people on campus, I know everyone's really excited, and they're going to be loud. So it's going to be a great event.
A lot more information at joshesfund.org. You can go see the Gatel Cup on March 30th at the U of I Ice Arena, and the famous Jim Cornelison singing the national anthem. Matt Morrow and Diane Gatel, thanks to you both for joining us a few minutes.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Scott.
All right, Scott. All right, some more Monday morning quarterbacking when we come back.
10 seconds remaining, and the Aggies are going to dribble this one out in Charlotte. What a stunner in North Carolina. The Aggies kick the heels off the road to the Final Four with an 86-65 win. The defending national champions are done, and the Texas A&M Aggies are on to the Sweet 16. They'll play Michigan in Los Angeles next week.
Is anybody upset by this?
Hey, you remember when they didn't used to play good basketball in Texas?
It was an afterthought.
Welcome back, Monday Morning Quarterbacks. I'm Scott Beatty, along with Lauren Tate and Matt McCumber, filling in for Brian Barnhart. I was thinking about this tension of, if you filled out a bracket and I had UNC winning, and you're watching that game, you're going, well, is this a win-win or a lose-lose situation? Because my heart was not behind UNC. I just thought they'd win the game.
Yeah, well, I think most people thought so.
Yeah, I still haven't gotten that. Right. I still haven't gotten over 2005 and the Sean May foul call. So I was perfectly, and I coached a year at Texas A&M, so I was all Aggies.
Oh, I forgot you had that behind you. How was that experience there?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, College Station is a great town, and it's the only game going there, and they are Aggies. They're crazy about their Aggies, and so you get great support, especially football, and now that they're in the SEC. But I really enjoy my time.
I'm just curious to know, if people have brackets, and do you pull for the good story, or do you want your bracket to stay intact?
Oh, you pull for your bracket. You always sure you pull for. I don't know. I've never filled one out.
Depends on what's riding on that bracket.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I'm the smartest guy in town in this respect. I know I don't know anything, so I don't try to do it.
The rest of us are too dumb. You can join us in at 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Mike is up next on the phones. Hi, Mike.
Hi, gentlemen. I want to talk about the state tournament a little bit. I had some friends of mine go Friday and Saturday. I had to work. But to me, there are sure a lot of empty seats again. I wonder if anybody noticed that or anything.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the head on the TV got back to a certain spot. There was, I don't know, whether you think Peoria's starting to wear off or.
I think you got too many divisions. That's what I really think. But I think you've got so many teams from Chicago that have come to dominate the thing that it's almost not competitive.
I would agree a little bit with that. I'd also agree
Simeon
with...
Simeon got beat this year, but that's very unusual.
Right. And, you know, they hold the tournament, especially the 3 and 4A, on the weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's tough.
I couldn't go. I mean, no. I like to go, but you miss the whole NCAA tournament.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I grew up going to the Assembly Hall for the state tournament where there was just two classes. I went ever since I was 3 or 4 years old. My dad always took me, and I looked forward to it every year. I thought it was the best thing, and everybody wanted to get downstate, you know, Chicago, or you're one upstate if you're down in the St. Louis metro area. But I loved it when it was in Champaign. I know Peoria has done fine with it. They have an experience there and whatnot. But for me, it should be back in Champaign.
Yeah, you know, last year, Orr won at 2A. Maywood Park is
Proviso E.
Morgan Park is right there in 3A, and then you got Simeon in 4A, and of course, as we know, Simeon got upset this year by Whitney Young, I believe, and so the Chicago teams have just come to rule to the point, and they don't bring the number of fans that we used to get from Southern and Central Illinois.
Well, and I think you're right to your point, Matt, too. Maybe people are going, I've got other options to entertain myself with over the weekend, whether it be other sports on TV, whether it's my iPad or spring break, and I'm just not going to make the trip to go see these teams if I don't have a rooting interest in them.
They won't come to the State Farm Center either. We won't get the numbers that we got once upon a time, not when we were two divisions.
Yeah, I could see it. You know, it's probably not – so much the location, it's just the divisions, what's going
on. The
world
changes.
Yes, it has. The iPads, you know, the internet, whatever.
We have not touched yet on Isaiah Martinez, the Illini wrestler who lost his bid for a third national championship, losing to Vincenzo Joseph of Penn State on Saturday night. I watched that, and you could just see that he was stronger. His opponent was stronger, and
exactly.
I don't know what's behind that. I know
you beat him just a month ago in the Big Ten.
I don't know I'm not a wrestling expert, but you could just see the upper body strength of Joseph on Saturday night.
Couldn't get a takedown, could he?
No. And it's unfortunate. I mean, let's not take away from how great of a wrestler Isaiah Martinez is. Obviously, if he had gotten this third title, that would have cemented him as one of the greatest athletes of all time in Illini history. You may still be able to put that label on him, though.
Right. I mean, he's had an unbelievable career. I mean, kudos to him. And, you know, I think he's represented the university very well and has kind of gone out of his way to, you know, just put that orange and blue on with pride and go out for his school. But what he's been able to do, I really wish he could have capped it off. I mean, there's nothing better than leaving your legacy of a last final match with a win. But, you know, it wasn't meant to be. And, again, you were right. He just wasn't the stronger opponent the other day.
He was dominated. It was 6-1, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He tweeted out yesterday, Illinois, the past 4 years, I have given you my absolute best. I am proud to have worn the block eye. It has truly been the greatest honor of my life. Now, please excuse me for a period of time while I take a much-needed vacation.
He deserves it.
He does. So Isaiah Martinez closing out a career with the Illini that he wanted to finish with a win, but certainly is something to be very, very proud of. Monday morning quarterbacks, and on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, John in Camargo says, Lauren, concerning whether or not to put a defender on the person inbounding the ball, if it was Tom Brady throwing a football to the other end of the court, wouldn't you want a 6'9" person jumping up and down in front of him?
I wouldn't, but everybody else does. So I'm wrong, okay?
You're always comfortable in your own skin.
I want five people back guarding four. Now, that if you don't like that, that's okay. We can differ. Mm-hmm. I'm not alone. I mean, there are a few people that agree with me, but I think most coaches would put a guy on the end line.
You certainly take away angles, right?
Yeah.
What is the biggest trade-off?
I don't know. I mean, as far
Syracuse almost didn't get their ball inbounded against Michigan State.
As far as putting a guy on the ball?
Yeah.
Just
more, if you get it in, get an open shot.
We're talking in a situation where there's a long pass need.
Yeah, right.
This is what we're discussing. I mean, we're not talking about it. This is at the end of a game with everything on the line, and you've only got maybe 3, 4, 5 seconds to shoot.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you think the majority would put a guy on the
I would think the majority. I would probably say 80% of the coaches would put a guy on the ball.
What did Knight do?
Who?
He did not, did he?
He didn't. You're right. He did not. Now, Iowa and the Andy Kaufman shot, they had a man on the ball. But, you know, you never know what's going to happen. It's what you
bother,
believe.
That didn't bother TJ Wheeler.
It sure didn't. But, you know, it's what you believe in. And
I've just never seen anybody really hampered by the guy there. I don't see it. I mean, I see him get every time they get the ball where they want to, I think. But again, I'm in the minority, so I'll accept the fact I'm wrong.
In a news item that will surprise almost no one that's been following it, Penny Hardaway has agreed to be the next coach at Memphis. Been seeing reports out now from ESPN and Sports Illustrated. And apparently that was long in the making.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's returning home.
Yeah, I have a rough deal for Tubby Smith. You know, I kind of feel for him there.
One of the all-time greats.
Yeah, I agree.
As a person.
Yes.
And it's certainly a good coach.
Right.
I go back all the way to Tulsa beat Illinois one year when he was coaching. I never forgot that. And I talked to him after the game. And it was always very genial. And when he was at Minnesota, you could always talk to him before the game. And he was just a good guy.
Tremendous person, yes.
Bill says on a Castle Heating and Cooling text line, I heard Jordan, referring to Jordan Caroline out in Nevada, was transferring to the University of Hard Knocks. Bill.
We don't know what he's going to do. I think it's a long shot to get him.
I think that's an ode to Simeon Rice Monday Night Football intros.
Oh, good point.
Simeon always said School of Hard Knocks. I think mm-hmm. a lot of Illini fans got upset because they wanted to hear Illinois instead of that. But that would be nice. I'll take them.
We're back in a moment to wrap it up on Monday Morning Quarterbacks.
To give him a three-point lead with 2.4 left. It is no good. Langford, ahead it goes, Winston. Half court to is no good off the glass. Syracuse wins the midcourt heave. A three to try and win it for Winston is off the mark, and Syracuse is going to the Sweet 16.
This team perseveres through no matter what happens. At the end of the first half, that's an impossible shot. Then they bank one. The second half, I think they start out with three or four threes in a row almost in the second half. And these guys just keep going. They keep battling. Frank fouls out. Doesn't faze them. They just keep going.
Sad when, you know, you're in a locker room with, you know, some of those guys that don't get another chance. But there's nothing that I can say that they didn't do. They played every bit as hard.
Highlights from Westwood One, Chris Carino on the call, and then you heard Jim Boeheim, head coach of Syracuse, and Tom Izzo on the losing end from Michigan State. And Sparty is out, and a lot of people had them going deep in their brackets. Scott and Lauren and Matt with you wanted to touch here in the last 60 seconds that we have on Illinois baseball. On the weekend, Bren Spillane had 8 of 13, 3 home runs, several more extra base hits. He's part of a really potent Illinois baseball lineup right now.
There's a reason why he's batting cleanup. Didn't take Dan Hartlib long to put him there this season. And, you know, he's a guy who was really set back 2 years ago by a beanball.
Wow.
He got hit in the head, and it really spoiled his first year here. And last year he was okay at times, but this year he's really on the ball.
The Illini stay at number 24 in the Baseball America rankings, and they've got games tomorrow and Wednesday. Gentlemen, it's an honor to do this show with you. Thanks so much.
Hey, great.
Pleasure.
Loved it.
Matt McCumber and Lauren Tate. Brian will be back on next Monday's Monday Morning Quarterbacks, and I'll have Penny for you tomorrow. I'll get you set for the election, among other things. CBS News next. Thank you to Ed Bond. It's News Talk 1400, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana News Gazette Media Station.